Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The novel You Exist Too Much tells the story of a young, queer, Palestinian-American woman whose life touches a lot of fault lines. Cultural, religious, sexual, generational. The unnamed narrator is a grad student living in New York, but not really thriving. In fact, she has an eating disorder, and her relationship with the girlfriend she lives with has gone stale. As she embarks on a new journey to grad school and new adventures, we learn more about the main character's backstory, her childhood in the DC suburbs and the Middle East, her fascination with men's clothing and shaving, and a mother who is not disposed to understanding why a little girl would be interested in those things. You Exist Too Much was selected as a most anticipated book for 2020 by O, the Oprah magazine, Good Morning America, Vogue, Elle, and Harper's Bazaar, and I am very happy to welcome the author, Zeina Arafat, to All of It. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
Did I say your first name correctly? Is it Zeina or Zaina or something?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's Zeina. Rhymes with Dana, so
great.
You got it right.
So I read that you wrote this book, You Exist Too Much, while you were at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. How did the story come to you?
Well, the story began for me with a question that I was interested in exploring, which is, why is it that someone might set their sights on something off in the distance, something unattainable, versus what they actually have right in front of them? And what kind of person would do that? And I chose to locate that question initially in Unrequited Love. And from there, as I was writing these sort of a series of unrequited romances that are woven throughout the book, I started to think about that question on a more macro level as a Palestinian. And the character is also a Palestinian-American. And I began to think about unattainability in the context of Palestinian statehood and self-determination and certain rights as well, other rights. And so that's sort of how the story evolved and how it grew into what it is now.
And the book is really full of misunderstandings, mixed signals, missed connections, characters who want not quite the same thing or are under a misapprehension about what the other one wants. And I have to tell you, if you wanted to make the reader share the protagonist's anxiety, you succeeded. Although she has a comfortable life in a lot of ways, life is really not easy for her.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so much of this book is centered around longing and frustrated longing and also shame around longing, both when it comes to love, when it comes to other appetites as well. And so I suppose I was trying to really understand where all that longing comes from and why it manifests in the ways that it does. But you're right, it's not easy for her, for the protagonist.
The book opens with this very vivid scene that takes place in Bethlehem when the protagonist is 12 years old and she's visiting with her family. And this is kind of one of the moments when I think the difference between boys and girls and perhaps between cultures as well that she's living in becomes really, really clear to her. Do you want to talk a little bit about what happens in that scene?
Sure, yeah. So it's a scene in which the protagonist is in Bethlehem visiting with her mother and her uncle, and she's shamed by the men there for wearing shorts. And, you know, she's a 13-year-old girl, you know, and doesn't really realize, she's 12 actually, and she doesn't really realize that, you know, culturally you're not supposed to be wearing shorts at that age, especially at a holy site. And that, you know, she ends up trading her shorts for her uncle's pants. And that scene is kind of intended to illustrate both cultural misunderstanding and the sort of like the awkwardness of cultural in-betweenness and some of the painful and sometimes humorous moments that accompany that in-between state. And I was similarly trying to explore the in-betweenness of sexuality And that scene for me encapsulates both of those things, along with the family's reaction to both the cultural in-betweenness and the sexual sort of in-betweenness of this narrator. So, and it's meant to be funny as well, because both all of the, I wanted to bring some levity to these topics in addition to...
Well, it's unsettling a little, and funny. I mean, you write from the perspective of this 11-year-old girl, wearing my uncle's baggy trousers, I enjoyed occupying blurred lines. Ambiguity was an unsettling yet exhilarating space. And my initial read on that was like, oh, she's beginning to, this is like an early sign that she is not going to be a standard issue heterosexual. And I wonder what kind of trouble that's going to get her in with her family.
Right. Yes, you were right to think that, and to see that as a sort of like precursor for what was to come in the rest of the book. Yeah, because there is tension there between her non-heterosexuality and her family.
I think it's sort of a basic idea in our society that more traditional societies, more religion-bound societies, perhaps like the Palestinian one, are going to be less receptive to a kid that doesn't observe what's expected of them kind of gender-wise or self-expression-wise. Is that the case, would you say, among Palestinians?
You know, I mean, I would say that more and more, increasingly there's an acceptance, and there's more sort of acknowledgement that there are, that there's more acknowledgement of queerness and more acceptance of it as well, increasingly so. But I think that it has taken time for Palestinian society to kind of, and Arab society as well, to kind of catch up in that regard. But at the same time, I mean, I found that now in 2020, there are many like visible queer communities in the West Bank, in Jordan, in Lebanon. So it's becoming increasingly accepted, but it certainly, I think, remains a struggle. And you still see incidents of, hate crimes and persecution of queer people in the Middle East, and that's, unfortunate, obviously, and quite tragic. So I think it's opening up in that way, but there's also still work ahead and a ways to go.
One of the interesting dimensions to your protagonist's dilemma is she's been living with her girlfriend for quite a while, but she can't quite bring herself to explain to her mother what her living slash love relationship actually is. And her mother is a sophisticated woman who's been living in the West for a long time, probably I would think would have the judgment to eventually accept the knowledge that her daughter is a lesbian or bisexual or in any case not heterosexual.
Yeah, and I think that that's the sort of trajectory of the book, is both the narrator, coming out to her mother, but also the mother coming to accept the narrator, her daughter. And you're right, she is a sophisticated woman. She spent, at least the last 27 years of her life in the United States. And yet at the same time, she grew up in a different era and in a different culture. And just there's all this sort of societal expectations and presentation that I try to present in the book as a part of her culture and a part of just who she is, the mother, and, her concerns. So she's kind of coming up against all of that while at the same time, accepting the reality of her daughter. So I think she eventually makes progress. I think they both eventually make progress, the mother and the daughter, and sort of meet somewhere in the middle.
There's kind of a humorous scene when the main character is in a bookstore. She's, I think, browsing the self-help section, and she comes across a book that contains the term love addict. This is in the personal growth section, I believe. Is that like a real phrase that you saw in a real book somewhere? Because this idea is very powerful to her. It becomes actually transfixing to her.
So so it is indeed a real, it's a real condition. And there are entire, you know, 12-step communities, SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and just there is, it is indeed a real thing. And I've seen, I've witnessed people who suffer from it. And it's, I mean, it's almost as, it's as if they are struggling with a, like, substance. You know, it's, it can be just as intoxicating and just as destructive.
What distinguishes it from the love that all of us need?
What distinguishes it is the self-destructive behavior that accompanies it. And the sort of, like, first of all, oftentimes there's a mistaking of what counts as love. And for love addicts, it becomes, in this case, right, obsession in many of these relationships. It's not, you know, the reader can see that these aren't, like, healthy, mutual love-based relationships. But at the same time, you know, there's a sort of uncontrollable appetite for the object, the love object, that can lead the person to engage in, like, harmful, self-destructive, and just, like, life-shattering actions in a quest to obtain, quote-unquote, love, in the same way that, like, a drug addict will do anything to get the next hit if it's, if they have to.
My guest is Zaina Arafat.
Entirely consuming.
My guest is Zaina Arafat. Her new novel is You Exist Too Much. I love that title. Where did it come from?
Thank you. The title, so the title is a line in the novel, and it's a line spoken by the mother to the daughter, to the narrator, and it is meant to sort of encapsulate so much of her struggle, which is this, this feeling of taking up too much space. And when you tell someone, you know, you exist too much, you're basically saying you need to exist less. And so much of her life is spent trying to negate herself, both through, you know, an eating disorder, as well as these, like, one-sided asymmetrical relationships where she sort of, like, loves at people without there being a reciprocal response on the other end, such that, you know, validates her. And so, yeah, I mean, and the fact that she doesn't have a name as well is an effort to speak to that theme of, like, taking up less space and self-negation. So, yeah, that's where the title comes from. It also speaks to that macro level of being Palestinian, you know, having your sort of right to exist as such be denied. So
your main character inhabits a lot of worlds that are familiar to you. And I'm wondering, as you wrote the book, did you know where things were going to go, or did she end up working things out, maybe even sort of in an unexpected way?
So I never knew where the book was going to go. I mean, I would, like, leave the, I would close my computer at night and be really excited to wake up the next morning to see what she was going to do. And I mean, often I felt really frustrated with her choices, but I really felt like I, you know, had to be true to her. And at the end of the day, I mean, she had to be authentic more so than being likable. And if authentic meant behaving in a certain way, based on, you know, the sort of traumas that she endured, as well as just, you know, the addictive patterns, I had to allow her to make those, behave in those ways and make destructive choices until she was able to see her way through on her own. So, I only knew what was going to happen by writing it. And that really is true. I mean, characters take on such a life of their own. It's fascinating.
It sounds like a really enjoyable experience. My guest has been Zaina Arafat. Her new novel, her debut novel, is called You Exist Too Much. It's in bookstores now. Zaina Arafat, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this a lot.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.